Hello and welcome to Progressive News Analysis. I'm Kaveh Tafoi. What is a nationalist or neo-Nazi with far-right terrorist ideologies? Norway's anti-Islam terrorist Breivik listed numerous European freedom parties and neo-Nazi parties as allies because of their anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim stance, not to mention several anti-Islam personalities from the U.S. in his writings titled 2083, A European Declaration of Independence. More than a week after the Norwegian terrorist attacks, Europe is finding itself extremely exposed to the threat of a growing right-wing homegrown terrorism. In this edition of Press TV News Analysis, we will examine how big these movements are and how much of a threat they pose society.
Danish media have reported that members of the country's neo-Nazi group, Danish National Front, have received military training north of the Russian capital, Moscow. This man, Dmitry Domushkin, who is the former head of Slavic Union or SS Nationalist Movement, says his group trained the Danes in tactics and sharpshooting in an area near the residence of the Russian President Dmitry Medvedev.
Hello, Dima. I'm very happy that I chose to visit you and Slavonic Union in Moscow in April. Many, many good and unexpected things have come out of this visit, so that I'm very happy about.
His group was banned in 2010 by Russian officials for their violent nationalistic views and acts. Since then, he has joined forces with other groups from inside Russia and Western Europe to form an international network of extremists. The umbrella group members are self-proclaimed admirers of Nazi German figures including Adolf Hitler, Joseph Goebbels, and Alfred Rosenberg. Their anti-immigrant stance has so far led to the killing of many foreign nationals in Russia. Slavic Union's Norway branch is called Datsik. Norwegian police have confiscated large arms and ammunition from the group. Datsik has publicly held Anders Behring Breivik's deadly terrorist attacks. Far-right extremism is also rampant in other European countries, including Austria, Sweden, the Netherlands, and Germany. In Austria, for instance, the far-right FPÖ party was elected in 1996 to rule the country. However, it was forced to leave power after pressure from the EU. Still, six of its ministers are in the Austrian cabinet. In the Netherlands, a far-right politician has caused a lot of controversy with his anti-Islam and anti-immigrant views. It seems Europe will have a tough time ahead to combat homegrown terrorist groups that developed when it was so much focused on fighting Muslims.
Well, let me welcome the guests for this edition of the Press TV News Analysis. We have a board member of the Peace Center joining us from Washington, Paul Magno. We have author and journalist Phil Reese joining us from London. And also a racism expert is joining us from Manchester, Dr. Leon Mousavi, who joins us on the phone. Gentlemen, thank you all. Let me go to you first, Leon Mousavi, Dr. Mousavi, that is. Can you please define what neo-Nazi or far-right ideology means?
Well, this type of ideology has a long history in Europe, and it's basically based on the perception that white people or certain people who are perceived as being of fair skin and perhaps with blonde hair or being native to Europe as they see it are in some way superior to other people from other parts of the world. And part of this ideology can have a very violent aspect. And we all know about the Holocaust in World War II, which was related to exterminating people who were not supposedly part of this superior race. And today, when we're talking about neo-Nazism, then we're referring to this type of belief that still exists today and this type of preference that some races still have where they want to actually be violent to people who they perceive as different or who they perceive as outsiders.
Okay, let's look at it, Phil Reese, in terms of this neo-Nazi activity, if you want to call it. It appears to be a phenomenon that's growing fast in Europe, even in the United States. Organized representation is what they have. They have international networks based on the report we just saw in many countries. Phil Reese, how large a movement is this? I mean, which groups, if you can tell us, have the largest representation and why, and how did it get so widespread?
It became widespread in part because the values that it holds, and a lot of these groups, by the way, have moved away from the old neo-Nazi agenda, which was basically anti-Semitism and overt racism. And they've effectively adopted an anti-Islam agenda. They've adopted a cultural agenda. And one of the reasons that you've had these groups growing at the fringe, the neo-Nazi groups, is that their ideology, or at least large parts of it, has been accepted by mainstream right-wing politicians throughout Europe. If you looked at what Anders Breivik wrote in his 1,500-page tome, it was remarkable, the similarity in his writings with the politicians who've been fighting the so-called war on terror, the kind of established politicians on the right wing of Europe and America. So to some extent, these views have been legitimized by the mainstream, and that has contributed to their growth.
So you have political leaders in Europe, and also based on his manifesto, which was written in Washington, which was written in London, Paul Mango, tell us how much of these groups, mainly the anti-Islam activists, has been brewing in the United States for what period of time, and how widespread is it in the U.S.?
Well, I think there is, it's been around for a long time, and it's certainly got serious legs in the years following the 9/11 attacks, when basically we really had an administration, a right-wing administration, that was absolutely intent on polarizing the world between us and them, as the President Bush put it at the time. And them was terrorists, Muslims, all conflated into one. One demonic enemy. So we've had that going on for the last decade with some serious intensity, and it's given a lot of room for the kind of events that we've seen in Norway recently. But, we have a long history of varieties of racism in our country's history. Less Nazism, but certainly white supremacy goes back hundreds of years, and it's rooted in, this institution of slavery and the conquest of the continent at the expense of native people. So there's a long history to live down in the United States that's really been exploited extensively in the first decade of this century. To pursue international agenda of U.S. supremacy in the world.
Dr. Mousavi, when you hear about how this has been developed in the United States and, of course, in Europe, and, of course, the groups and the personalities, there's always, based on the ideologies, an anti-Islam sentiment. Do you think that based on the duration of time that these groups have been brewing, that may now... in a matter of speaking, the tide to be turning, given the incident in Norway and given the vast expanded presence of these groups throughout different countries?
Yes, well, I think that there is always an anti-Islamic element. And as we know, there are different trends in racism where different groups are perhaps demonized more than other groups at different periods. And in the current period, it's quite clear that it's Muslims who are targeted as the enemy, and it's Muslims who are demonized, whereas in the past, perhaps other groups have been more heavily focused on. So this anti-Islamic sentiment has always been part of racist discourse or racist ideology, but at the moment, it's definitely part of the emphasis is definitely as Muslims as the evil people in the perception of these far-right people. And I just want to totally agree and endorse what was just said a few moments ago, that this is a very mainstream type of idea that we find in the parliaments of many European countries being expressed by politicians who, they don't advocate violence against Muslims, but they advocate the same types of targeting and singling out of Muslims that leads to or can form the basis of which these violent, hostile terrorist attacks against Muslims can actually occur.
Phil Rees, so you have politicians that don't endorse it. Of course, there are some that have come out publicly against multiculturalism. But at the same time, tell us how you see the role of the media. And then one particular example was that New York Times bombing scare that occurred. That was blown up with that Pakistani Muslim man But yet these groups, we don't really hear it in mainstream media, do we? The information is out there, but it's just not reaching the end user as much as, let's say, that terror bomb at the bomb possibility that had occurred in Times Square.
Well, remember that in terms of the number of terrorist incidents reported in the United States and in Europe, you find, in fact, that Muslim-inspired acts of terrorism account for a tiny percentage, perhaps 5-6%, perhaps less than 1%, depending on which report you see. Most acts of terrorism are to do with separatist groups, many of them to do with the Basque separatist movement, ETA in Europe, a lot of Latino groups, left-wing groups in the United States. So yes, it's remarkable that the perception in the media is that Islam is primarily the core cause of terrorism. Now, I think that the Western media and Western society has basically existed on a culture of fear in the last decade. I think this has been promoted by governments. It's possibly been promoted in order to legitimize wars in Muslim nations. After all, if you're going to send your forces and tell your public that you're going to invade Afghanistan, you're going to invade Iraq, you may want to encourage them that maybe one day you might attack Iran, then what better than to demonize the enemy, to make your enemy appear a threat to you? In fact, this is an inverse of the truth. This is black is being turned into white. It's almost a big Orwellian lie of the post 9/11 period. Because remember, even the 9/11 attacks themselves, they were a response to Western foreign policy in the Middle East, the projection of Iran as a threat. I mean, Iran has never invaded anybody, and it's got American troops on all its borders. So in fact, it's an inversion of truth that if Muslims in any way react back to violence, react against occupation, they are presented as a big threat. But let's remember what Norway has showed it, that these words have a price. This culture of fear that the politicians have developed created Anders Breivik.
And at the same time, are we going to see, Paul Magno, anything to reverse this trend? I mean, when we look at what's happened, when we look at the incident in Norway and all these groups, it almost seems like it has been overlooked in terms of the profiling that takes place all the way from politicians down to police officers that are manning the streets. Do you think again, this will be a wake-up call for officials in the U.S. in terms of widening the profiling?
Well, I think it's hard to say what will happen at the official level because government officials, law enforcement officials are so susceptible to that politics of fear-mongering in the first place. And make bargains with it and accommodate it much more than they should. On the other hand, I think that there are, you know, at least in the United States, quite a lot of grassroots groups who are working at many, many levels to resist, you know, racial bigotry, whether it's anti-Muslim bigotry or another aspect of it that's extensive in the United States is anti-immigrant bigotry directed at Latin Americans migrating to the United States. There's a lot of work that's done by grassroots groups, and it remains to be seen how much that can change the atmosphere for the better. But I agree, we do have, you know, a politics of fear that has been loosed dramatically in the last decade. But I want to remember, too, that it's not just since 9/11 that this has been going on. We'll remember that the Oklahoma City bombing that Timothy McVeigh was ultimately convicted of and executed for turned out to be the product of homegrown right-wing terrorists. But the day that it happened, there was a news rumor about authorities chasing a suspect all the way to London who was a Muslim, and they were working, you know, the presumption of Muslim terrorism to that day, and that was years before 9/11 happened. So it's an old and useful foil for the media and government authorities to exploit, and they do it unconscionably, to tell you the truth.
Okay, Dr. Mousavi, let's switch gears a little bit here. We look at, for example, in the United States, where FBI officials have been cited to post or put up microphones inside mosques. Now, here's one of the details that was interesting. In Russia, you have Danish nationalists that were trained, according to a print publication, by Russian nationalists and neo-Nazi extreme groups inside Russia, and that the Russian government was, well, they had knowledge of this. Tell us a little bit about that, if you have any information, and also why it is that governments are aware that these types of training goes on, that this type of messaging, especially when it comes inside the internet chat rooms, that they're allowing with their knowledge for this exchange of extreme ideologies that they call it, but indeed it's their terrorist related, that can become terrorist activities to actually occur on their soil.
The problem is that the governments in Europe have overwhelmingly focused on terrorism that comes from extremist Muslims who don't represent the majority of Muslims, but who are just a very tiny minority. And because they focused on terrorism from this small minority of Muslims, they've overlooked the type of terrorism that can originate from the far right. And that's why in Britain we've recently had a new counter-terrorism policy announced, which was a long, lengthy document, which only contained very, very minimal references to far-right terrorism and was preoccupied with what they call Al-Qaeda terrorism. So what is necessary now is for European governments to readdress this balance and to start to think about the ways that Muslims can be the victim of terrorism. In fact, in Britain, we've already had several people who have been convicted because, thankfully, they were not able to continue with their plans to commit violence against Muslims. And this is a serious concern that the governments now must start to consider, just as much as they're considering terrorism from extremist Muslims.
Phil Rees, UK's role, please expand on it for us. Since Breivik began his journey in extremist right-wing politics at a small meeting, as he said, in London in 2002, a London connection with links to the EDL. I mean, he wrote that in his manifesto. Is UK another, so to speak, hotbed for extremism or terrorism?
Well, again, the EDL has emerged, the English Defence League, on the back of, you know, mainstream newspapers like the Daily Mail, the Daily Express in London, which basically talk about a huge cultural threat. So once you've established that, and you did mention something earlier which is very important, Kaveh, that what's happened in the last probably 5 or 6 years in Britain, and it's now happened throughout Europe, is that multiculturalism has been rejected. Now, it's very dangerous that to try to say that certain people do not belong in your society. It used to be done in America and in Britain based on somebody's race, the color of their skin. Now it's been that Muslims are being told, you don't necessarily belong to Europe. So it's very easy, once that is in the mainstream, all right, to then go along the line and find people who will actually then resort to violence, that will then take that idea and run with it, and take guns and thuggery and all the other sort of tools that the far right have at their disposal, and make it something that they feel is contributing to society because it is part of the conversation now. They're not that off the wall as they used to be. They're not bonkers. People are saying that, you know, Breivik is pathologically sick. Well, actually, he came from a swamp. He was generated from a swamp of ideas that are all around us today in Europe. And you can't separate him from those ideas.
Phil Rees, how much of a danger do you think it is with Europe, especially the Eurozone countries, when, if we want to take Greece, they're saying their neighborhoods that the Greeks are just beating up people who are non-Greeks, this nationalistic, but yet at the same time, the beating because they feel they're taking their jobs away. And of course, with the debt crisis that's hit and has plagued Europe for quite some time, are we looking at a situation that may get worse?
Well, if you look at people like Marine Le Pen, the new head of the National Front in France, or Geert Wilders, we saw him in your report earlier, you know, from Holland. These politicians, it's very interesting, apart from their anti-Muslim agenda, their other agenda is a kind of nationalism and rejection of the Eurozone. Though they're two planks, so they're using the economics and the problems that Europe have got and sort of combining that with an anti-Muslim agenda, making people feel that somehow their economic problems are something to do with Muslims in Europe. So that is something that is contributing to the violence. And yes, the security agencies in Britain and Homeland Security in America, there was a man who left Homeland Security a couple of years ago in the States, and he said they only had half a dozen people looking at right-wing terrorism, and I think one of them was him, and he was fired. So, I mean, there are very few people now looking at this, whereas all the resources have been concentrated on what they see as a threat from Islam.
Paul Manglo, is that right, to try to revert the economic problems? Of course, in the United States, they're also suffering. People there are suffering from a dire economic situation, 1 in 5 on food stamps, according to the latest reports. Is it right to revert that back to Islam? And what do you think, in terms of the U.S., it's got a large Muslim community, along with other religions, that whether it's just the tip of the iceberg, that perhaps there are worse things to come?
Well, I think there's a serious disconnect between, you know, pointing a finger of blame at Muslims or at Islam, and the social and political and economic stresses that our society is facing. But I do think that right-wing ideology plays on people's fears. It'll point to Muslims and say they're the problem, you should be afraid of them, worry about them. They will point to you know, any one of a number of things. You know, I think it was pointed out that the attacker in Oslo took some of his inspiration from some elements of the Tea Party movement here in the United States. So there's, you know, it's been talked about in the European context here that, you know, the mainstream conservative political movements that are entrenching themselves and expanding their influence here in the United States as well as in Europe create an atmosphere where people can go off the deep end and try something wild, while no one is really paying attention to them. You know, launch an attack, engage in violence, hurt people, scare people. I think in the American culture, in the U.S. culture, the Muslim is such a convenient and easy scapegoat that it's almost irresistible. Even though, you know, there are many immigrant Muslims living in the United States, there are many what I'd call homegrown Muslims. People, you know, Islam is not brand new in the United States in the last 5 or 10 or 20 years. There have been practicing Muslims, certainly what they call the Black Muslim movement goes back to the middle of the 20th century as a social force that, you know, generated something. So it still is easy to look at people who don't come from where you come from and don't look like how you look and speak different languages and have peculiar sounding names to the American ear and say they're the problem, they're the ones you need to be afraid of.
Obviously lots more to talk about this.
And organized politics around that.
I'm sorry? Okay. Well, unfortunately,
and organize
that
politics
anyways, I
around
do apologize.
That kind of fear.
That's Paul Manglo from the Washington Peace Center with the statements from Washington. Also like to thank author and journalist Phil Reese from London and racism expert from Manchester, Dr. Leon Mousavi, with his comments. Thank you for watching. Send us your questions to newsroom@presstv.ir. It's the old-fashioned way. That's our email address. From Mikhail Batahway and the entire team, it's goodbye.